You're listening to The Andy Peacher Show every Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday at 8 p.m. GMT and 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Horizon Talk Radio. Horizon Talk Radio. Talk radio that deal with the real issues. HorizonTalkRadio.wordpress.com. Now, it's your turn.
Yeah, very welcome. It's Andy Peacher again. And tonight we're discussing targeted individual Benton from Coventry. He's got a lot to tell us in the next few minutes of how he's had a nightmare in Coventry for many, many years, and what it's like to be a targeted individual and how he knows who's doing it, why they're doing it. I'll let Benson start off his story then, rather than me, you know, reading out loads of stuff. So welcome to the show, Benson.
Hello. Good evening, Andy. Thank you. Good evening, viewers.
Listeners. Listeners, we ain't got a TV here.
Listeners, sorry. I do apologise.
There's quite a few Facebook groups from TIs and gang stalking who are listening tonight, because I've got that page open too. So, yeah, carry on with your story, Bentham.
Okay, I'll start off. Okay, I'm from Coventry. I come to Coventry in 1977, where my mother meets an Englishman. When we come over to England in 77, okay, we stayed with the grandparents for a bit, and they're all connected to the military, to the Navy and the RIF. And from there, it says, I went to infant school in Coventry, went to junior school, went to secondary school, and I lived my life in Coventry ever since. My mum got divorced with a partner due to domestic problems and all that kind of stuff. That was around in the 1980s, just before we started secondary school. And from there, she's brought me and my brother up, and fair play to that. I mean, she was new to the country. She had a hard understanding of learning the English language while she did two jobs. Yeah, to bring us up, trying to pay a mortgage off, and trying to bring two children up. So that was hard for her, and I respect her for that. And we probably gave a hard time, obviously being young, we never realised. And from there, it says we sat down in the area, Ball Hill, Stoke, Coventry, and we lived a normal life. And families do. It says we've all grown up. And my targeting started in 2004, which involved, it's in the Coventry Evening Telegraph, and the heading was Family Fury at the Killer's Sentence, 6 years. Again, I had to go to court as a witness of what happened in the area. The person who unfortunately died, God bless him, he was the council manager's son, which I found out afterwards through the paper. I mainly lived in the local area, and he lived in the flat upstairs. Where it happened, my neighbour was involved. He lived opposite me. I don't know what happened. And after the court case, a couple of neighbours who knew the person took a dislike to me, and they were carrying out some kind of a noise disturbance and trying to intimidate me any time I left the block of flats. But I just shrugged my shoulders, saying, well, I mean, if anything worse comes to worse, I can defend myself, but nothing ever come of it. It seemed like they were trying to get me to flinch, be paranoid, or possibly lash out at them due to all the body language and how many times it happened after this court case and after it was put in the local paper that the family weren't happy about the sentence. So I carried on. At the time, I was unemployed, off work with a bad back due to having an injury in 2000. And that went through the courts. I was off work on the sick. And after this court case, 6 months later, I got kicked off the sickness benefits. And so that was due to a bad back. For about 4 years, and it was genuine. So the manager, he dropped the box on my back when we were working in the warehouse one day, when we were palletizing and unloading a pallet full of computers. But fast forward, I got kicked off the sick, and I thought, okay, I'll start looking for some work. Started off with some, end up going to a sales conference in a hotel in Earthwick. I went in there, and there's a big, massive warehouse organisation. I won't say their names, due to legal reasons. A big, known corporate company in a warehouse. And I got interviewed there, so I had more CV. Soon I had loads of warehouse experience, drove forklifts, doing all the, I'll call it warehouses, basic to me. Really, as far as I can see, I can do my eyes closed in most places, picking, mathematics, talking, communicating to people. So we looked at everything. We go, okay, we'll start off in the stock control. And it's a brand new warehouse. We wouldn't know no one working at the time when I was in there. There was only a couple of people, the managers, technicians, setting up everything. And in the stock control room, there was some other man there called Simon Tilly. I'll say his name because from that day, he took an instant dislike to me. And after a couple of days of stock controlling and that, I thought it was going okay. I went in on the third day, and the two supervisors from Nottingham, and they weren't dressed like other managers in smart clothes and that. They were dressed in tracksuits and looked like they were off a gypsy camp, to tell the truth, from Nottingham. Am I going okay, Andy? Am I going too fast?
You say it as it is, Benson, because...
Yeah, does it sound okay?
It sounds brilliant.
Yeah, and so after the third day, they turn around and goes, oh, yeah, we don't reckon you're suitable for this position. We'll put you in the warehouse, we'll put you on the forklift. And I mean, it's a bit more physical, a bit more... probably better for your role. And, okay, I was like, okay, fine. And this Simon Tilly says, he had something to do with it. I mean, even in the office, they put garlic, like Dracula was around. And they're being sarcastic, these two people from Nottingham, so it's been the stock control manager. One was called Beth, and I can't remember what her book, they're both partners. I can't remember what her partner's name was. That was around 2005, about a year after the court case. And then I went to the forklift. After 5 minutes, some woman, HR manager called Carol, and I found out she's from Wrykyn, she come out and go, oh, we don't reckon you're suitable for the forklift. And I'm thinking, how does she know? Whatever. And I'm thinking, I've drove forklifts for years. So I kept my mouth quiet. I mean, I've drove counterbalance, electric ones, gas ones, then reach trucks, V&As. Yeah, so for her to tell me you can drive forklifts, and I'm thinking, I mean, ain't right, but I kept my mouth quiet. I mean, knew something was going on straight away, because for me, someone's got warehouse experience, kicked out of stock room, which is easy enough. I mean, driving forklifts before, you know what I mean? I thought, okay, someone's been in here, due to the court case, ain't stupid, something's going on in here. So, after this, they go, hey, you can go to the tannoy area, to where the picking area, the pick office, where they give picks out, those other people on the computers producing the picks, or that could put it all together, collecting it together, and then other people in and out of the pick office, and then a couple of people on the tannoy, where they shout out pickers' names or managers' names, can someone come to the pick office, please? They have it on there, and after a few minutes as well, it says, no, we don't make any suitable in here. I was like, okay, and then they're putting it out and picking. Which I found a doddle. And so, a couple of weeks that all this happened, they got more and more workers in, and a lot of them were, I'll say, foreign, new to England, Africans, Polish, Latvians, and a couple of English people there from Nuneaton. There was a couple of Coventry people there. Yeah, fair enough, there's some people from Stoke Park. But I won't say their names. And loads of them were like trying to warm me up, getting in the way, slowing me down on picking. They were being rude, arrogant, trying and just being complete idiots, trying to warm this up. And this were all the blokes. And some Polish bloke, he's come up to us and coughed in my face. And they kind of pushed us away while I was picking. I was like, okay, man, look, calm down, you've got some manners. And then I didn't think nothing of it. Carried on picking. Next thing, I've been shouted out on the tunnel, can Benson please come to the office, please? And I goes, okay, yeah, hello. He goes, oh, we've had a complaint. I goes, what's this? He goes, oh, we've had someone complaining that you're pushing them out of the way while you're picking. You know, like the person totally reversed it, or the main, and gone to the office saying that I caused the incident. So again, this all leads this Simon Tilly and other people for some reason being implanted in there, over operators, or linked to the police, trying to see if I had a temper. And obviously due to what happened, it's a serious incident, what happened with my neighbours. And so, okay, off from then, and I ain't stupid. I mean, I ain't lose my job of the people trying to pick fights or trying to be rude and arrogant. So that went on for a few months. And then Simon Tilly, a couple of times in the on the way out in the clocking in machine to come in and out of work, a couple of times he tried to instigate a few things. And again, I got called in on management, them and me, for starting it all, that Simon Tilly had made complaints. So I said, okay, let's get the CCTV involved then, and we're all part of the union. I think when we all joined, we're giving a form to join the union. So I was part of the union. They'd come in. We'd seen everything, all the CCTV and that, and there weren't nothing to it, really. It's more Simon Tilly than me. So that got dismissed. In the end, I got pulled for 3 disciplinaries, which were all made up. And on my last one, it was my day off. I went in to do overtime, and it was April the 1st, 2006, possibly, 2006, 2005. And they said, we received an incident where someone said that you threatened to stab him. I go, you what? Because, you said that you threatened to stab him. So I go, okay, get the CCTV out. He weren't in these, he said anything. And if I can remember, I think he said something. I go, look, mate, I've had enough of people trying to cause trouble and that, and on management, whatever, trying to give us disciplinaries. So I go, if you've got any problem, just speak to us afterwards, after work. That's what I said to him, carry on working. And anyway, they said, we've got to suspend the app because of the complaint of the serious of the nature. I goes, okay. So I got suspended on Saturday when I went into the overtime. And from there, when the union come in, they go, look, the union even says, look, you can see they're trying to gang up on you. They don't really want you here. Best thing is just to leave and resign. So that's what I did in the end. But I wish now, looking back at it, I wish I'd said to them, call the police. Because I didn't have this on the CCTV. They had me and this other lad from Ash Green, the bed out in Rhines, because that comes up later on in a couple of years' time. This lad from Ash Green, they said his friend was on the Uber oil doing a pick, and like, you couldn't really see him in the camera. And so it was two people against me, kind of thing. So in the end, I ended up leaving there. And but in between that, when Tom's management called me into the office, one manager from Nottingham, he was like, are you okay? Is there anything wrong with you? Like, are you on medication? And while he was saying that, he was shaking. And then another manager, again from Nottingham, when he escorted me off site on the last time, on the April the 1st, he's turned around shaking and all that kind of stuff. I wasn't too mad, because I'd be causing no trouble. I'd be going home. But it looked like they're all acting. So that's where I noticed the gang stalking, workplace bullying, street theatre, bullying culture at work. And then from there, I thought, okay, I'll go and do some sales. I've decided to try and do something easier, and instead of being too much physical and that in warehousing, because I've been warehousing for years, and I thought I could see if I can do better, all that kind of stuff. Went into sales, picked the script up, went to a group called Cobra. I said Cobra because there is an organisation in the UK called Cobra. It was linked to the intelligence services. But this is a sales organisation called Cobra. It had offices in the town centre. And in between that, I realised I was being stalked from my home to my flats by the people locally who were related to the person who the court case was over, who died, unfortunately, the council manager's son, all his generation, and some of these combat breakers, and a couple of strange other people who were a bit older, probably similar age to me, I'm 48, who were seeing like police officers or military, whatever. But I'm thinking, okay, I'm not no criminal, I ain't doing nothing. If the police think I'm up to something, or someone's given some rubbish information, that's down to them. Hopefully they'll go away. That's how I thought at the beginning. I thought, okay, it's probably the police, due to the nature of the incident. Blah, blah, blah. We're just keeping tabs on me to see, one, testing it at work, no violence happens, hopefully it'll all go away. They realise I ain't got no hot temper, whatever. But when I went to sales, went in the sales offices, Cobra, when I first started there, they put me through the script, met all the workers, and then after a day in the office, the next day, they end up going out on a sales. It was a field sales work, it was door-to-door. And we were selling gas. One team was selling gas, the other team was selling TalkTalk, which is the telephone at the time, and the internet. So while I was out doing sales around the West Midlands, and the rugby and surrounding areas and Coventry and that, I knew I was being stalked. And I was wondering, they were doing it electronically. TRs all over the world will know this. They were doing it electronically, via radar or sonar. I was thinking armed forces, Navy, because I'm stupid. I've looked into Army, Navy, been interested in all that kind of stuff when I was younger. Even went to Portsmouth when I was younger at school on a Navy expedition, some course. And I thought, okay, we're going a bit OTT, trying to see whether we're paranoid or not, or whether we might freak out, kind of thing, and do something abnormal in public. So while I was doing the sales, just a kind of person I was, while I was knocking doors and that, they were doing V2K and this electronic kind of stuff. I was waving on the doorstep to them. Because I was knocking someone's door in the middle of a terrorist street, whatever, and there weren't no one around. And yet I could feel this frequency, electronic, energy weapons, whatever. Because I said I've done my research afterwards. I was doing my research while it was all going on. And I found out all the technologies, the gang stalking, found various sites, TI sites, people talking about gang stalking across the world, a couple in the UK. And I thought, okay, this is what they're doing. And then the longer it went on, I was thinking, surely these idiots have to give up soon, because they can see, because they do cybercrime. Yeah, they can see that I'm researching it all, trying to find out how we're doing it, and all that kind of stuff, and where all the equipment's linked to. And after sales, after the cover group, even the co-workers, they were doing the same as what the lads did previously in my job before, in the warehouse. They all started doing the same street theatre. Some were coughing, some were grabbing the crotches, which I never thought. At the time, I was thinking, are they gay? And trying to work out if I'm gay or something, I don't know. Or is it some kind of this warped cult thing, whatever, they're just trying to warm people up. And in this cobbler group, to start off with in sales, they had to get everyone hyped up. This is their way, the manager's way. So they paid music. A lot of it was dance music. And all the salespeople in that were all putting their hands in that in the air and that and dancing around, getting warmed up. After the music, after 5 minutes, they just talk about the script, where they're going for the day, how many targets, what targets they wanted of people, blah, 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 and who was going to be in which team. And so that happened in the sales group. People trying to warm me up there, and then on the field, it was getting done by covert operations, kind of thing. And like I said, you always think it's eventually it's going to go. This is, I understand, a lot of TIs, depending what kind of persona you've got, what kind of attitude you've got, it can get to people who don't understand it. They've got no education, maybe they're. Didn't have the intelligence with education to realise this is the more police officers, whatever, and probably some alcoholics, whatever, unfortunately, or drink or take drugs, whatever. But these people, they're just targeting governments and local people, so they target anyone, whether you're old, young, or middle-aged, or you're a pensioner. And so I can understand, I said it has got to a lot of people, and it makes me... horrified to think about how many people that they have messed up and destroyed since the governments and local councils have been doing this. And as I said, I've been researching, and it goes back to KGB, the Stasi in Germany and Russia, and due to it from the Nuremberg treaties, the German scientists who got taken to trials due to the crime they did in the wars against the Jews and obviously other countries. After the Nuremberg trials, the Americans, a lot of these judges and that, the countries that were trialed them, like America, they wanted to take some of the German scientists and find out what information technology they had that they could use. And that's where it's escalated from. I've researched the FBI, CIA, researched Dr. Ewan Cameron, watched videos of it all, and it says it's horrendous. It's horrifying. Sickening that humans can do this to other humans in the name of science or in the name of targeting for their experiments to put people into mental health or because people have been contracted and listed for whatever reason. Yeah, they are out to destroy them. And I finally observe, twisted, how other people can take orders from the leaders, where I know it's in the order, it's part of their job, but surely their own human feelings and traits of being human, they have a duty of care to say no, and knowing that they are crimes against humanity. So, and that's what I did, and then the research, found out, talked to other TIs, joined loads of groups, and realised, it says, yeah, it's a worldwide pharmacy program. And as far as I can see, it started with the German scientists and Dr. Ian Cameron and the FBI, where he experimented with a tape recorder at the time, in the 70s, or whenever he started Montreal in Canada. He had tape recorders put on beds next to hospital patients and playing whatever, and then seeing whatever reaction they had. And from there, it's gone on, FBI and CIA have took it onto the field. And through technology advances, clever operators can use all kinds of equipment to do exactly the same what Dr. Ewan Cameron was doing, and put it on the field, and put in all kinds of frequency, voices, sound, noise disturbance into people's heads. And so, yeah, and so back to me, after the sales, where I am now, I joined the company I'm with now, I've been there for 13 years, I ain't going to say the name, that was in 2007. At the time, I was taking control of the gang stalking, but they set up Big Brother in 2006. So sorry, I'll go back to 2006 after I was doing sales and working. Yeah, I was working there at the previous warehouse. 2006, I went away to Eritrea to go on a holiday with my mother. And a week or so before, I heard loads of some kind of crawling and loads of cables, loads of whistling going across my ceiling when I was on my computer. At the time, my computer then was a desktop computer, and I was sitting at a desk on a wheelchair doing something, researching, studying, whatever, about this gang stalking. And two people, one was a person who kind of heard and knew, who lived in both blocks of flats. Okay, a girl called Zina. I won't say her surname. And she worked for the local care sectors as a care worker. I don't think she was a nurse. She used to wear a maroon uniform, and she lived in my block of flats and the block of flats next door for some reason. And she used to have an Alsatian dog, and she's from our generation, and a lot of my friends knew her, and she used to work in the town as a glass collector, and all the doormen knew her, and she went out with a couple of people who I know from our generation, and so I didn't think anything of the time, but when I heard her voice upstairs and who she knew, who she connected with, and I was thinking, okay, I mean, something ain't quite right there. And even right above me, you know what I mean? While I was kind of carrying on, thinking, oh, okay, you know, am I hearing things, whatever. It come over, and it goes, he knows. Yeah, and then that was it for the night. It went on for about 5 minutes. Didn't think nothing of it. I also came from a holiday. So I went from holiday 2006 to Eritrea, July 2006. Just before I went away with this girl upstairs, I went out of my flat one morning, and she was outside, but as soon as I went out, opened the main door to get outside, my block of flats, she's kind of quickly turned her back and speaking to a Kurd woman, a black woman. Excuse me, I don't want to offend anyone. And she was wearing a blue nurse's uniform. Yeah, and as I went past, she was mentioned to a friend she had a flat upstairs. Yeah, and I'm not hearing things like that. I mean, I know my ears are sound and my mind sound. Didn't think nothing of it, because I was going on holiday, whatever. When I went on holiday, around July, I think it was, June, July 2006, when I come back, August time, I just carried on my life. I mean, maybe the young lads had been up there, but they'd gone. The young lads at the time who were upstairs, the combat breakers, and they were all different ages. They were on Britain Got Talent. They'd gone, and when I come back, you know, some other people moved in, some older people, and they were doing they were tapping, blatantly tapping, banging, right? And we're all sitting there watching TV. And I went flinching. I thought, okay, we're just doing the same thing. We were just trying to get them agitated. So I went flinching, and it just went on for a couple of weeks. And then one day, it was heavy, like a heavy, flat kind of thing was being slammed on my floor. So something heavy with a like a flat, but like a table, floor table turned over, whatever, I don't know. Big, heavy, flat thing was being smashed on my floor, and the person was shouting out, it's done my head in, rotting to move away. And then his friends were trying to calm him down, and then he shouted out, I'm going to do a trigger on him. Okay, now, man and behold, that kind of kicked into me straight away. Because a trigger is an ex-doorman, who a lot of people from my generation knew. He worked on the doors in a club called Buster's, which are now knocked down. And he was built like Mark Tyson. Me and my friends, when I was 18, whatever, we used to go out and we used to go there. But there's always trouble in there. It's trouble with all the older lads, whatever, you know, older than us. All new to me. We made all the start going out, and the first time I was going out drinking, whatever. And so, as you do when you're younger, and every time there's fights, whatever, every now and then you hear a couple of these doormen, and they used to shout, yeah, trigger, and whatever he was doing, talking to the women in the club, whatever, he'd come running out, and he'd end up getting the troublemakers out. And whatever, fighting, Sarah wanted to fight, but it was a club. It's back in the 80s. A lot of places all over the UK were pretty violent because they're all interracials, they're all hooligans, they're all some of them skinheads, whatever. And this is the older generation. It didn't really affect me. As I said, I'd start going out. But a couple of older lads I know, they're all saying they always have fights against racism and all that kind of stuff. And so... So he was known with all his fights outside these clubs, and so this trigger would end up fighting a few people outside. And so when he shouted that out, and I'm thinking, okay, due to what we've been trying to do to me, they must have got obviously to this man trigger, and doing exactly the same to him as what they've done to me and to other people did it to, and they traumatized him, broken down, and gave him man-made schizophrenia. Because I was around at the time, and so was a lot of people from my generation. And people knew back then that he was in mental health, and people always thought he was mental, and said that he was hearing voices. But due to what I can gather now, and due to these people shouting out his name, they've kind of gave the secrets away, and gave the game away in how he did it all. So this happened, when they shouted out Sugar's name, it went on for a bit. They were just trying to keep you awake, just in noise disturbance, trying to get you mentally and physically shattered. That's what the whole program is, when they keep going and going and keep coming back. Like, there's no time limit on it. You think there would be, if the government, the police officers, and they've got no funding, so they say. Yeah, and so you think, who's in charge? Who's in charge of these people who've got all this equipment? Because, I mean, they can't be local people. Local people ain't that intelligent to use all this equipment. Understand, it's not hard to use. You can be used and trained how to use it, but obviously it's come from someone in government, in the local police, or someone with armed forces and Navy experience. And these doormen, who all pop out of woodwork, some even working in places I've worked in, where the workplace bullying has been going on. Yeah, they've all showed their true colours, and they've tried to warm me up. So I'm working it all out, thinking, okay, these people did exactly the same to this man called Trigger. And they destroyed him and his family. Okay, his name's Ian Harding. That's what I found out. I found out from someone else. So, what was Trigger's name? And then they said his name's Ian Harding. So, somewhere, and he got put into mental health in the UK. Yeah, after, I can see what they did to him. They captured everything he did while on the doors. The doormen working with the council, psychiatrists, and the Coventry police. Yeah. Took that to the court of law. He went to prison, obviously, for fighting, but that was his job. But because of not being educated, not knowing what was going on, computers went around and internet went around then, and I found out later on as well, he went to a special needs school. He didn't go to normal school because unfortunately, he went to unfortunately for him, I mean, he was taken to a different school compared to junior schools and secondary schools, I think. And so, yeah, he wasn't educated. No one was around to help him to find out what's happened to him and to research like I did. And so he got put into the system of mental health, misdiagnosed with schizophrenia. And he's been in mental health. So it's obvious he's been put into the mental health system since what? He was 20, gone 20. Yeah, and he's been passed on. He's had electroshock treatment done on him, all kinds of antidepressants, antipsychotic, and psychotropic medication forced on him. Yeah, and he's been in mental health institutions all over the UK. And due to what I know from these people here, they've been in, they've captured everything of them, the research, the capture, one, to make profiles from it, two, to train the people with it, and for other people in their sectors and in the industry, because there's all different organisations involved. There's the police, there's the psychiatrists, the social services, there's NHS doctors and nurses I know who are involved from my generation, the urologists, and the people who the psychiatrists hang around with, some of our centre doctors, very experienced in sociology and human behavioural science, which is all linked to the psychiatry, British Board of Psychiatry, linked to the BMA, and linked to the Tavistock Institute. And what I know from what these idiots are doing, and they're not giving up, they've captured everything, and they're using internet streaming technology. And due to when it started around 2005, some of these Coventry police and some of these Coventry sector workers and even ambulance crew members are involved. We're all getting excited and obsessed about internet streaming technology, and the deed have took it to the extreme, and they're using it on me and my family, and they're giving it to the locals and giving it to their organisations, and also they can make a profile on it, and use the court of protection on me, which we've done before, and in the future, what I can gather, because it echoes around here, or I'm pretty stupid, or giving the conversations away, they're trying to make an approach on my mother in the future, and I hope to put her in the care home, using the court of protection. And due to how long it goes on for, there's no time limit, yeah, everything they capture, they're making profiles out of it to try and detain people in the future. And so that's why I'm exposing it. That's why I've come to you, and I want to help other people in the future and TRs at the moment to try and understand how what we are doing in the UK, and it's all linked to social services, to psychiatry, and to the mental health sectors, and some junior and student nurses and doctors who, in their family, somewhere along the line, are linked to Freemasonry, linked to some kind of secret society in various cities, who have taken advantage of this of this gang stalking, targeting practices that are known now to be going on around the world.
And yeah, so, I was just thinking there. I'll give you a minute. It seems to be like people are stalking others. It seems to be a form of bullying to the extreme. What I'm trying to say is, they're not strong enough to face you directly and say, look, I've got a problem with you. You know, they do it like a girly way, into intimidating
cowardly.
You.
Cowardly, yeah. Cowardly. How long has it gone on for? I've shouted, and I realised they're catching it all, taping it all, and going to use it against me in the future. But, due to how they're doing it, coward's way, and due to peace officers being involved, and I've seen some peace officers in my works area, and I've been in complaints to managers about it, where I'm working now for 13 years, and they've covered it all up. I end up writing the complaints grievance letter against the managers in 2013, when I had enough. And for the first two, three years, I was being stalked on outside when I worked at this present company for 13 years. And then it seems to me like they've probably really seen who's working there. And don't forget, it's local people involved, it's doormen involved. They've seen who was coming out of there and made an approach from our co-workers, managers, supervisors on the outside, on the sly. And that's how they manipulated and infiltrated my work company. Because I said, for the first 2-3 years I worked there, at my present company, I'm at now, everything was fine. But they were still trying to do electronic harassment, V2K, on the outside, and that's why I know they're using Navy and Army equipment. But every TI handles it differently. I had to keep my cool and try and block it out, and I just tried to, you have to use your concentration levels and your conscious to try and override it all and just concentrate on what you are doing. So be it whether you're at work or anything you're doing, that some kind of mean whether you're at home doing your chores, or you're out doing your shopping, or you're out talking to someone, or helping your family or friends, you have to try and block it all out. But otherwise, they'll try to make a fool out of you, because then you'll be acting in front of the public, whether you're talking to someone in the workplace or whatever. If they try and get to you, yeah, you'll end up making a fool out of yourself. So you say you have to be mentally strong and just try and block it all out, because that's what they want. They want you to break down, lash out, or freak out, burst out, have a meltdown in public, or have a breakdown in crisis in public, or lash out at someone. So, yeah, so I'm understanding, yeah, it's that hard for some TIs, because in other countries and areas, depending who the leaders are, who the organisation is funding it all, depending on how much funding they've got, how much they can soften off from the local council, from the police force, and depending on how up-to-date they are with technology, yeah, it varies. I know TIs in America, they're getting physical pain because the equipment's burning them. So microwave equipment, directed energy weapons, and EMF weapons, electronic magnetic frequency weapons. I've been loads of research, and there's loads of different weapons out there, even laser beams. In America, some of them are having holograms. And when I went to TI rally last year, which I'll come to in a bit, some experience at TI, he's gone through 30 years of being targeted, he goes, he means, heard my story, I heard his story, he goes, oh, wait until we use a hologram on you. And I've researched holograms, TIs are talking about holograms in America, and that technology is out there. And even now on the news, I think they exposed the Pope. There's a video about the Pope, and he did a talk last week, and on some news channels, they're saying that was a hologram technology. But at work, yeah, 2013, I put a grievance in against the company. A manager from Birmingham, a Mr. Mark Bailey, who I found out studied human biology and sports physiotherapy. His father, when the company opened, where I am now, corporate directors from Tesco's and Asda wanted to design our warehouse, because before 2006, it just used to be a small warehouse. They wanted to expand it and make it into a distribution centre. So 2007, when the distribution centre, they got the idea from board of directors from Asda and Tesco's, and one of the managers they put in there, the depot manager, he was a young manager, comes straight out of university, Mr. Bailey. And when I put the grievance in, and he was a good manager, he's probably one of the best managers we had there, to tell the truth. And since I've been there, 2007 to the present day, we've had about 16 to 20 managers and supervisors come and go in that company, and they've had a high turnover, which is, I find, pretty strange. But anyway, when I put the grievance in 2013, that same week, and I was off, July 2013, the first week of July 2013, I put a letter in against the company saying that I put a grievance in against it. I realised there's some kind of a surveillance operation going on in there, and also that there's a load of favouritism going on where some people are getting looked after and the rest of us are getting all the heavy duties. Now, when I said I was on holiday that day, I think, when I put the grievance in. When I come back, Mark Bailey put his notice in and already left the company. But also, the grievance was against him and a local country supervisor and his people in the warehouse, who were obviously given easier tasks to their friends, which happens everywhere. But at the time, I said a lot of us workers were sick of it, because the people who get looked after, that, I mean, why should they get looked after and the rest of us do all the heavy work or all the heavy deliveries? And so I pointed that out, and it just all got covered up. And so that was 2013, where I reported surveillance going on in the workplace, and they denied it. And from there, even then, in September 2013, I complained to the police, to the UK Independent Police Complaints Commission, or IPCC, Independent Police Complaints Commission. They've changed the name now. I complained to them in 2013, and it went to West Midlands Police Inquiries at Lloyd House. the Professional Standards Department of West Midlands Police at Lawyers House. And I gave them links to all the equipment, to targeted individual websites. Yeah, links to Aureology, which I realised they were doing Aureology from the flat upstairs, which Aureology is used by psychiatrists and mental health workers. Hey, they think that they can detect a mental illness or physical pain or illness while just looking at your eyes. And so I realised this is going on from the flat upstairs because I could hear all the equipment. And I gave all this information to West Midlands Police and to the IPCC. And they denied it all, saying, nah, please don't do this. And we ain't got the resources, we ain't got the funding, blah, blah, blah. So it all gets covered up. So I was going to work. They were still trying to give me a hard time, still trying to wind me up. Still got covered up. And then I realised then as well, they were sending me out with a lot of drivers. We had a high turnover of staff, and all the people that kept coming and going, and some of them were armed forces people, Navy people, ex-council people. Some of them are clocked as over-operators. Some were young, some were old. And one man I realised was an ex-police officer. He always denied it. And then another lad, I'll say his name, Teddy Chapman, because I know he's definitely a junior, and Ryan Lewis. Yeah, these got put into my company, and they're around the same age as the council manager's son, who died. So 20 years, 25 years my junior. And when they started working there, they were trying to wind me up. And another lad as well, who says he's a supervisor's son. He looks nothing like him, and he's the same age as these two other over-operators, Tony Chapman and Ryan Lewis. And they've all been trying to wind me up ever since they worked there. Tony Chapman and Ryan Lewis left. But in the time they were there, Ryan Lewis got me suspended for 10 weeks. And after I got suspended on Thursday, on the Monday, over the weekend, on the Monday, the psychiatrists from the Sunday Centre doctors come heavy-handed with the social worker and my doctor. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? So, we heard you got suspended from work. I go, you what? I go, we heard you got suspended from work. I go, well, who told you? They go, under confidentiality and our secrets of yours, we can't really tell you, but people are concerned. And luckily, coincidentally, my mum came up to see me that day, and she was here at the time when they knocked the door. So I let them in, and they had a retired psychiatrist there who kind of took over the other two, Dr. Holmes and Dr. Pretorius. And Dr. Cosciotti. And they turned around and said, oh, and he started interrogating me. He just went straight to the, oh, why did he get suspended? Why did he argue with Ryan Lewis? And what was over? And I could see him getting all distorted in the face and that, and he's been a bit loud and a bit rude. So I turned around, because I wasn't happy then being here. I goes, look, those arguments happen all the time, yeah, at home, workplaces, or at schools, whatever. Yes, people got disagreements in opinions, whatever, or that they don't find the funny side of a joke, if they think the joke's on them. So I'll go, and that's what I said to him. I'll go, I mean, tell the truth, I mean, is this some kind of banter at work? And he was trying to take the mickey out of me. So I'll end up saying to him, if you've got a problem, just tell me what it is. But it escalated from there. And for some reason, I was off for 10 weeks. And in them 10 weeks, the COVID operators are still there. Still doing the noise disruption, banging, tapping, and whatever equipment they're using, clicking away and all that kind of stuff. And it just seemed so desperate and so obvious that it was all connected and that we're all conspiring together. But they had to keep it secret. More works people couldn't tell me that... these people were here, I had to keep an eye on this, whatever, I could have suspected this, because I hope to use them in a cloak and dagger operation, which is the court of protection. And so that was in 2015. But I'll go back to 2014. I was off work, during the World Cup. And I like betting on football, and a lot of my friends from my generation, going back to when he's drinking town and at workplace as well. I used to know my football, and I bet, but not bet heavy. I'm not a full-time gambler. I'm not a big-time gambler. Yeah, I'm in my football. I'm at the weekend. I bet £5 or £10, whatever. And a couple of times in the season, I'd win £300, £400, £500. But that'd be a couple of times in the season. And so, during the World Cup, I was winning in the early rounds. And I knew these people upstairs were doing cybercrime. And I knew they were all corrupted, and because they knew all the local people, and they knew all the doormen, they knew all the nurses, and they knew the nurse who lived in both boxes, flat, Zina, and the people from the court case and the funeral of the lad who died, the council manager's son, the people who lived there at the time, they used to talk to us, and they were into the football, and they knew, oh, they used to see them in the bookies, and they used to see me pick, because at the time, full internet betting took off in 2000 onwards, when I moved to Wykeham, where I'm living now, I was still going to the local bookies, and I was putting bets on, and they were seeing me pick money up. And so they knew I was winning every now and then. But and so I realised they were doing cybercrime, and I was thinking, that's why they're ever spending it all. They're allowing their people to try and profit from the cybercrime being done by the covert operators. Yeah, and give the genies a head start, because these covert operators, the person in charge is obviously older than me, so he's in his 50s, 60s, whatever, and he's done it all before, and everything he's doing, he's catching it all and trying to pass it on to his juniors. He's hoping someone in the sectors makes the profile up and hands it into the court of protection. So I say that, and that's why I'm exposing it all. Because I said doctors, nurses, social workers, mental health workers, psychologists are not going chemistry. So I'm exposing them and how they've gone around capturing everything of them since the gang smoking started. And I hope to use it all in the future, one for court protection, and the rest of it all is being siphoned off for liquor taking websites for their people, for the local criminals, their gangs, the career criminals, the doormen. And from other parts to nurses and doctors in various departments of the NHS University Hospital, some more for young juniors who are looking to get into the sectors of social services or the mental health or the police, and also firemen are involved. And so some of these people impacting my company, okay, are linked to the fire service, and the people in the flat upstairs, they are doing shifts. It's so obvious, excuse me, that they are doing shifts. And otherwise, the same people wouldn't be able to stalk you everywhere, especially if I go out on deliveries. They wouldn't be able to stalk me around the country in the West Midlands, because the company I work for, we go out delivering around the West Midlands. And so sometimes you work in the warehouse, and they've got people in the warehouse who do the workplace bullying, and they've got people outside, covert operators who are stalking me. Some probably even live in the area due to how big their big network is. It's like a county lines network. We're West Midlands Council in joint enterprise with West Midlands Police and West Midlands Fire Service and the mental health sectors, which obviously is mental health sectors and departments all around the West Midlands for the joint enterprise and councils. And so, and that's what I put it on. They've ever spent it all, and they're here to this day. And I don't know why they're still here, because they know I'm reporting it all, the coronavirus. I think it's kind of thrown a spanner in their works, because they were hoping to try and get a court order. And the more they ever spend it all, the more I keep exposing it, reporting it, I can't see how they can carry on. But okay, if all the TRs know, they do just carry on and carry on, hoping something might give, or you might do something, or they might hope their equipment won't get to you. And unfortunately, either give you a slow death, or unfortunately, for some people it's happened to, forced suicides. Now, I've never contemplated that, and God bless that for all the people who've gone through that. It's a shame, it's shocking. But all TRs who listen to this, you have to be mentally strong, yeah? And that's why we keep coming back, because you've been lifted for some strange reason, and I don't want to give up. So don't ever go through the negative feeling of thinking that you are alone. Yeah, you just got to reach out to people, reach out to organisations, and keep researching, and just be mentally strong. The more governments can do something to stop it and bring these government people and the councils and criminals to justice. And so, yeah, 2014, I can say, during the World Cup, we just come round to my flat after a couple of weeks of the World Cup. I was looking forward to the next round because I've already made a bit of money during the early rounds. And there was a knock on my door. During the day, I've been out shopping. I took about two friends shopping who don't have cars. And then I did more shopping, and then a friend come and see me, and he's going to stay the afternoon, and I'll just put my food away, two shopping bags full. And my friend come, he was eating something to eat, and I was going to sit down and eat something, have something to eat. My buzzer went off. So I answered it. I go, yeah, hello, can I help you? I go, it's the police. And obviously, due to what's going on and what I've reported, I go, well, sorry, mate, if you didn't have the password, I can't let you in. So, didn't think nothing of it. put the buzzer down. Didn't think nothing of it. I thought, obviously, we were after someone else in the block and let them come in, because he did say, can you let me in, please? So, I come back into the flat. He goes, who was it? Because I was the police. I go, look, as far as I know, we just here to come in and see someone in the block. Because that's what we've always done. And so, the next thing, a couple of minutes later, there was a heavy bang at my door. So I went out to the door. I go, there's three police officers standing there. I go, hello, yeah. I go, what is it? I go, I've done nothing wrong. What is it? And they've got this lady here to see her, and some Jamaican lady. She turned around and she goes, I'm from mental health, and we've got court order two, section two, to detain you. And they're, oh, shucks. I never knew they could do that to people when you've never been arrested and you've never been pulled over by police. So didn't really realise they could exert that much power authority, because I've never had no mental illness, no one in my family has ever had mental illness, and I've never asked or asked anyone to realise that's how they end up sectioning people off. I always thought you had to do something to get sectioned off, or picked up under section 136, or being drunk and disorderly, or causing trouble, whatever, in a public place, or losing it. And didn't realise that Facebook could just come round and just do that to you without you ever doing anything. So, my mate says I end up getting arrested, they all come in. In the end, it's three police officers, two sector nurses, and this Jamaican woman who she's disappeared as soon as she showed me the section notice. But I wish I grabbed it off her, because I've had a good look at it, and then she'd have disappeared. So they took me down to the local mental health institution, which is a Cadman Centre, which is based on the Walsgrave Coventry University Hospital site. And they took me straight down, and at the end I realised, didn't at the time, they took me downstairs. The police officers spoke to someone in there, and the next thing I was taken into the mental health ward. And I wasn't happy. I was angry. I was getting booked in. All the nurses and the workers are standing there, and they were like, "How come you're in here?" I go, "Well, you tell me." I go, "As far as I'm concerned, I'm not sitting here." And they were like, "Oh, we've all heard that before. We've all been sarcastic." So, and then I realised where I was. They put me in the most secure unit, which is where the schizophrenics are, the bipolars are, and the people who do self-harm. And I've got no record of mental illness. And they showed me to the room, showed me how it works, saying, yeah, we're in the morning, you'll be told to whatever, do this, we'll speak to a doctor, and then they'll probably put you on some meds and some medication. I was like, okay, I'll go, well, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not going to be taking it. I'll appeal straight away, and hopefully I'll be out of here. That's what I said to them. I mean, didn't realise it was a crooked system. And so, first 3 days, first morning, because I'm used to waking up at 5 in the morning, because my job starts at 6 in the morning to have our shift, 6 in the morning till 6 at night. I'm used to waking up at 5 in the morning. So I've jumped out of bed in this mental health institution the next morning, at 5 in the morning, did my sit-ups, did my press-ups, was like, can I have a cup of tea, please? They're like, no. I'm going to do what? I'm going to the canteen don't open until 8 o'clock. I'm going to do what? I'm going to, I'm not in prison. It's actually a care and sector, isn't it? Care and institution. What, tell me I can't have a cup of tea? I'm like, no. I mean, okay, can I go outside and get some fresh air? Or have a cigarette? We're like, no. I was like, okay. And then so, I realised straight away, these mental health institutions, they're not right for nobody. Yeah, because then a day they've took me out of my home, where I've just brought loads of food, and put me in a mental health institution where I can't even go out and get a cup of tea. I mean, we never wanted to do, or get breakfast or go outside. Yeah, so it's just like a prison. And so the first 3 days, I refused to take the medication until the court of appeal, which was a Monday morning. Monday come, they gave me duty solicitor. It wasn't much cop, really. It wasn't much use. Told him what happened. He says, okay, he goes, we'll argue your case. We see you're working, so hopefully they'll say that you're working, that they will get you out of here. I was like, okay. My friend come down, a Jamaican lad, said okay to him, because my mother was away in Eritrea. And here's where I knew they stitched me up. Because one, the cover operators knew my mother was away in Eritrea, 2014. Yeah, and that was any person. I never knew this. I thought I'm an adult. I should be able to get out. But my mother could have got me out of there if she was in the country in the section two. Because even though if you're an adult, your legal guardian, whatever, can get you out of there. And you're next of kin. They wouldn't let me use my brother. Use any of my mother. So, okay. So I realised that afterwards. And in the appeal court, I'll get my introduction, saying, yeah, I've been working for the same company for 13 years, never had a day off in 7 years. I've never had a day off in 7 years. So from 2007 to 2014, I never had a day off. Yeah, and that day off, that work record was ruined by the social services and the mental health administrators who detained me. Yeah, so they used that to try and label me, try and stand in me and do a definition of character for when I went back to work. Yeah, because I never had a day off. And even then, back at work before, all the co-workers used to say, oh yeah, I have 2 weeks off, or whatever, you're entitled to 2 weeks off. I was like, no, if I'm ill, I'll have a day off. Yeah? And so, when that happened in July 2014, yeah, in the appeal, I says, yeah, I've worked, never had a day off, blah, blah, blah. And even the judge turned around and says, you're not a danger to, you can see you're not a danger to yourself or a danger to anyone. And I thought I was getting out. And I thought, but he goes, but we're going to keep you in there and just keep an eye on you. And we'll review it in the... Well, they said, we're going to keep you in there and keep an eye on you. When they left, I went happy. I was like, oh, no, you're out of order. My friend, like, calm down. I'm going, well, why should I calm down? Because I shouldn't be in here. You can see I'm working. Now I'm going to be stuck in here. And it's going to ruin my work record. And they said, man, they go, oh, don't worry, we can give you a sick note for work and we'll tell work. And I knew straight away, I thought, yeah, they'll tell work, it'll get back to all the workers. And it's just there to label you. Even though they're to the secretary who gave the sick note out, oh, no, and the workers there in the Camden Centre, oh, no, don't worry, we're not allowed to discriminate you for mental health. Yeah? But due to that many people with mental health in Coventry, they've all been accessed by the communities and workplaces. I know, they're just coming all up. And so, after the appeal, they told me I had to take medication. Also, I'll only take, in tablet form, I'll only take the lowest dosage. And they tried to give me a Abilify and Risperidone. And I was going back into my sound and spitting it out. And once or twice it dissolved, and I realised what they're doing, they're just making me tired. And after 7 days, I was in charge of, all the doctors, the nurses, the psychiatrists that worked there, they could see that out of everyone in there, I was sane, I was having communications, I was exercising, I was doing everything okay, I was eating okay, I was sleeping okay. I was even in the TV rooms, I took control of the TV room for a bit when the quiz show was on. Watching a chase or Countdown Conundrum, which is all in the UK. Now, I don't often do the conundrum, the conundrum, which is at the end of Countdown, but on one day, I'll do the conundrum, Countdown Conundrum, before anyone else, before the TV contestants, and everyone in the room are all, they're all sitting there shocked. And then the next day, one of the Jamaican girls who said I had attitude when my first day I was in there. I heard it whispering to the mate, oh, we need to get them out of here, we need to get them out of here. So that tells me there's secret cameras in all these institutions as well. Maybe my opinion, but I spoke to one of my neighbours who's been in there before, and he was the neighbour whose flat the person who did the crime stayed at. Yeah, so the person did a crime that was leading to the court case, it wasn't his flat, it was one of the neighbours' flat. He got put in the cabinet centre as well. And then I realised as well, some other witnesses who went to that court case, one of the girls who lived upstairs, a witness called Chantal, and I realised, found out about her, she ended up getting drunk all the time and going out around the local pubs and getting a bad reputation. And so I'm sitting back thinking, are they all trying to get revenge on the court case? These council workers and these police officers trying to get revenge on the witnesses? Because I've noticed, what's happened to some other witnesses. And then noticed all the locals, due to gang stalking, that they were living in the blocks of flats that I'm living in, because due to the way they're stalking me. And I'm not paranoid, whatever. I mean, I've never looked on my shoulder, whatever. You can mean, I just sensed it in the end, and due to how long it went on for, in the workplace, they're street fitting and they're acting and trying to warm me up. They're just acting all out, hoping I'll be entrapped in front of the cameras. And so, Andy, due to when I got sectioned in 2014, after 7 days, the social worker, his name was Andy Says, from Leicester he is. He's this own social worker that kept coming to see me and got the court order to put in the cabinet centre. He came and see me after 7 days, saying, yeah, boy, we realise you made some good progress. Everyone's happy with you. The medication seems to be working. We can say we can get you out of here on the 10th day. I was like, okay, I'll go fine. He goes, anything, I'll go, yeah. Instead of giving you the tablets in oral form, in tablet form, I'll go there. And instead of healthcare workers coming out to see you all the time, we'd like to give you a depot injection. I'll go, you what? Because we'd like to give you a depot injection. I'll go, and what's that involve? If it's all your medication in one, it'll be a bit more than usual. And it'll be every month. I'll go, you what, every month? He goes, yeah. I'll go, then how long is that going to go on for? He goes, oh, we reckon it's going to go on for a year or two. I was like, okay, right. I'll go, I'll think about it, mate. I mean, but in the end, it was blackmail. I had to take the depot injection to get out of there. And I missed something out. Before the appeal, this social worker did say, if you don't start cooperating and taking your medication, yeah, you will never get out of here. Yeah, so that was, I think, on the second day he come down to see me when he realised I wasn't taking the medication and I put an appeal in. Yeah, anyway, seventh day he come and said that about the depot injection. He goes, we'll give you it 2 days before. So the next day, I go, okay, I'll take the depot injection. And I realise what I had to do. I had to take the depot injection to get out of there. So he got his nurses in there to give me the depot injection, which was up my bottom. And no lie, no exaggeration, overnight, it was like a steroid. Yeah, so, and it made me dead tired and dead drowsy, that and my eyes rolling around while I was trying to watch TV compared to how I was in there the 7 previous days. Yeah, I've never felt anything like it before. Really, I felt they overdosed it. I felt they put some kind of concoction in there. One was a steroid, because obviously I looked at my arms and the way I felt and I was moving and my legs, it's like a steroid, and whatever else they put in there, that was making me dead drowsy, dead sleepy, and making my eyes roll. And that was throughout different stages of the day. And that went on. And the social worker did say, he goes, oh, yeah, you have side effects for the first week, possibly, because until your body gets used to it. I was all right. So I had a death injection 2 days before I got out of there, on the 8th day. So on the 10th day, I got out. Me and I got home. The food was off. I had to throw some food away that was in the fridge. I mean, many of them mentioned anything about it all about giving me compensation. And I had to come round of getting used to this depot injection that was in my system for 30 days. and it took about 2 to 3 weeks. But when I got out of the Academy Centre, I was back at work a couple of days every weekend. I was back at work on the Monday. Now, because they're in partnership and they're talking to my works managers, they kept me in the warehouse instead of because I was on deliveries. They kept me in the warehouse for 2 weeks. Now, for 2 weeks, this depot injection, whatever they put in there, is having the same effect as when I first had it. I was working, pulling trolleys, picking, and my eyes were rolling, like I was on drugs or something. And I noticed, like I said, these workplace mobbing gang, whatever, they were sneaking about, or some COVID team in there, which I reported in 2013. They were still there, and as far as I can see, they were catching everything that they've done to me, and they're catching the effects of this medication, and they're hoping to use it in the future against me in some more skullduggery of the court protection, and they'll try and use it against you, take note, to try and ban you from driving. Yeah, that's why we do ovulology. Yeah, we do ovulology. For how long has it gone on for with me? They photographed me coming out of swimming pools, coming out of the sports centre when it first started, because when I worked at the company for the first 2 years, I did 8-hour shifts, and I was going to the gym because I had plenty of time. And I was getting to shape. I was like a middleweight boxer. And I've never been that big before, but because of the nature of the job, and we had plenty of time and doing 8-hour shifts, I was going to the gym. I was managing work and going to the gym. And the gang stalking was going on, all these doormen, even some ex-police officer who I know from the local area, got kicked out of the police force for corruption. He was going to the gym there in the Coventry Sports Centre. And I was being stalked and all that kind of stuff, with electronic harassment and that. And at the end of my gym session, I used to go to swimming. Obviously, going swimming, you'd have chlorine in your eyes. Yeah, and I didn't realise at the time they were doing ovulology. And coming out of swimming pool, whatever, and going home, they had clever operators everywhere taking photographs of how you are, how your body is, how you're walking, how your face is, which is all linked to sociology, human sociology, ovulology, facial expression capture, and human biology capture, because they use thermal and infrared ultrasound equipment to watch you inside buildings, which I noticed in the sports centre where I was doing training. Yeah, so I noticed the way my body is changing. Yeah, from going training, stopping going training, because my company suddenly went to 5-hour shifts. And so when went to 5-hour shifts, and the gang stalking got more intense, the workplace bullying, community mobbing got more intense, and the infiltration of my work company, ever working this, I stopped going to the gym, because otherwise that would physically and mentally shatter us. Yeah, and all the time, they were sitting the flat upstairs, catching everything, the changes of my body, going back to normal before I went to the gym. Yeah, and now my normal body size, I'm athletic, slim athletic, between 10 and 12 stone. Yeah, when I was going to the gym, I was probably between 11 and 12 stone. My normal body weight is between 10 and 11. Yeah, when I went in, so this is for the listeners. Yeah, just to give you an idea of what they captured. Yeah, and I noticed, and for the big mouth and all the people that are involved, they're making a show of me, trying to treat me like a village idiot or something, in their circles around Coventry, who they get access to. Yeah, to everything they're capturing, all to the internet streams. Yeah, to all the doormen, to all the hooligans, what kind of criminals, and the bad boys, whatever, in the Jamaican community. And so I've reported all this, like I said before. I've got emails now. I've got three emails, and I've got information going back to 2009 where I've been reporting this all around the UK to relevant governing bodies, complaining bodies, investigating bodies, and to the police, and it just gets covered up. And so that's why I'm on here. And so, Andy, I think I'll leave it at that. Any more questions?
No, not really. I was going to just comment that there is a lot of people that are being gang stalked and ended up in mental health, targeted individuals. One lady I helped rescue was called Suzanne Kellner Johnson. She was an alternative therapist, and she wanted to make people better, you know, and they thought she was crazy because obviously Big Pharma would lose a lot of money. There's Carol Woods, we rescued her. She was a social worker. She whistleblowed on the system in Lancashire, and we made their life hell, and they eventually released her. It took a few weeks, but we got there. There's Patrick Coyle from Northern Ireland. He exposed his GP for lying about his family and ended up fleeing the country. And there's a few more, yeah. So, but my message to them really is, the new people who are listening, is never give up, find a friend, because you're not alone if you reach out.
Yeah, that's a lot of advice. And the paperwork I've got, and even here, after I got out of this mental health institution, I complained straight away, I complained straight away to the social services head office in Coventry, Wayside House, and I had to write letters. And I complained, and Mr. Hittle, because then I had about four social workers come around, not Andy says, but four other social workers, some were Indian, trying to give me a sales patter to take the medication. Saying, look, yeah, we know you've tried the medication, and you say that it doesn't agree with you. We reckon it's going to help you for your mind to eventually ignore whatever's going on, because we don't reckon it's going on, and we reckon it's the fragmentation of your mind, that it's overthinking, and that you think you're being stalked, blah, blah, blah. And I said no, and I chased around trying to find out what information I had on my record, Freedom of Information Act, whatever. They said I had to pay £50 to see the documents they've got in the NHS and of my doctor's notes. So I paid them £50, and surprise, surprise, they gave me a good report of my time in the cancer centre, but digging deep in there, I found two NHS confidential records separately put in there, saying I've been in mental health institutions 8 times, including the only time I've been in there, yeah, in July 2014. And I thought, the crafty, sneaky, corrupted social workers, they've used this court. Oh, man, I can see what we've done. That's how we've got the court order. We weren't stupid. You can see straight through it all. The crafty social services and their sectors, they put them two fraudulent files in my NHS confidential records to go to the court protection and say, we need a court order on this case here, this man. He has been in mental health before, as you can see, and they've shown them these two documents that show I had loads of outpatient times between 2009 up to 2014, including 8 inpatient times between all them dates as well, even saying I've been in the Nita hospital. When I've never been in the hospital for a broken bone. Andy and the listeners, yeah, never broke a bone in my body, never been in the hospital overnight. I've had stitches, but I've never been in the hospital apart from the time. So clearly they constructed it by putting them two files in my NHS records, and that's how they got the court protection. That's how they got the court order. And also as well, I've been chasing compensation because of that, and chasing for them files to be removed. And the last 2019 up to November 2019 and December 2019, I decided to make some more complaints to the West Midlands Police Force via the online complaints procedure. So I got a copy of it on emails to let them know this gang stalking is still going on, COVID teams in the south stairs, they're still doing everything, what reported research, clinical close-up, hidden case studies, whatever they're doing up there, cybercrime. So I've got records of all that. And the Coventry Social Services Department and PALS, they sent me an email saying they're in the process of removing them two fraudulent files. And the last email I got of them was in November. There's a rectification to health records request. We received the email on the 11th of November, and after 1 month, we should hear from us, and we should delete the records. Now, that email was sent to me in November 19th, 2019. I've heard nothing back from them since. In the meantime, around the same time, around that same week, Social Services decided to call me again. Yeah, and one from the social worker called Nigel Curry. He says, oh, I hope you're keeping well. we've had a phone call from Powell saying that you've got some mental health issues. Well, all that was, I called to say, are you deleting his files and how long it's going to take? Yeah? They've reversed it and said, oh, we've got him complaining again. And we reckon he's having, they use the terminology in mental health. They say you're relapsing, you're either having psychotic episodes, you're regressing, or you're going through a breakdown or a crisis. Yeah, that's what I've noticed as well. They have loads of local people and neighbours, while they do these campaigns, gang stalking, targeting campaigns, they have loads of people making phone calls to you if they want to try and put you into social services and mental health care. So they've got a record of it all, saying when they go to the court protection, that they've had loads of people who are concerned about him or her, whoever they're targeted, that they've got a list of people who are concerned about them and they've made complaints about them for one reason or another, being their neighbour or their co-worker. So it's all scripted, they've all been advised, and they're just all told the same story so that they can get a damning personal prosecution and detain you or ban you from driving, whatever they want to do with you. Yeah, they do it for the court protection and it all gets covered up. And so that's where I was in November and December. Also, I know they're having a go at my mother and my brother in the same way, because we live in different places. My brother lived with my mother up to 2016, and I noticed he changed. And when I tried to tell them about gang stalking, they didn't believe it, and they were getting a bit angry at the time as well. So I was thinking to myself, are they doing the same thing to them as they're doing to me? Because, and I've researched it all, they do this thing and they play everyone against each other. And that's why we get OTT with equipment and manpower. And they can do various things to people at the same time. And so my brother went missing in 2016 and says, oh, I'm his brother. So I know who's affected by the targeting. I couldn't get through to him, so he left the family house. And then we didn't hear from him for a couple of years. So I was operating a missing police report last year to Coventry Police, and I went to Coventry Police Station, put a missing report person on him, and I gave a big dossier of all the research I've done on gang stalking and targeting and of what's going on, and then I gave that to Coventry Police Station. Yeah, that was in December 2019, so they know about it. And with my brother, they said he's an adult, he's left home, so he's not really missing, and I ended up printing off the 100 posters up, and I was going to put them out around the city. But on the day I was going to put the posters up, I went out to the town centre to some places where he'd been spotted, IKEA. I went in there, had a word of IKEA, saying, can I put some posters up in here, because I know my brother comes in here, blah, 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 with a few other people. They said no, due to company rules. Okay, fair enough. And on the way out, I noticed some man who I know and who knew my brother from the local area, who's now a care worker, and he knows a couple of people. You know what I mean? Coventry's only got a lot. Coventry, it's not a very big city, and you kind of know a few people, and you can link them all together. He turned around and goes, "Oh, give us a couple of posters, and I'll make a few phone calls." And fair play to him, because he was getting late. I went home and I thought, yeah, I'll start giving out posters tomorrow. I'll already get good if you're out, but not enough. But the next day, my brother's managed to phone up. So I thought, yeah, I'll stop talking to that man. He said he's okay, blah, blah, blah. So I passed it on to my mother, but I know he's been affected, and my mother has, by this electronic harassment from next door to my mother's house. And it's still going on. Anytime I go there, I've got apps on my phone, and my apps pick up all their surveillance equipment. Yeah, and anytime they put their equipment on, my apps are picking it up, and I've got records of them for the last 2 years, for the last year or two since I've had these apps. And so, yeah, so that's how I am. I've reported it, and keep exposing it, but it still goes on. And I want to put it out there, so TIs, we can have a better understanding of it, and anyone else that happens to around the UK. Or worldwide, depending how far this transmission gets out. Okay,
I'm just going to say, yeah, the feed is running out in a couple of minutes, so Let me just give my email out, which is on one of them, is online@journalist.com. That's online@journalist.com. I invite anybody listening to the show to give their story. In the meantime, I'm going to put my head together with Benson during the week, and we can see how we can get some of the issues that he's raised during the show solved, because he has a right to answers and he has a right to be left alone. And by the way, Mr. Policeman in Coventry, an adult gone missing from family members is actually a missing adult. Yeah, the only time they become unmissing is when they ring up and say, look, I'm okay. So for all the months that you were worried, you've done something to find him, just to make sure he does that one welfare call, and then he is an adult after that. But while he's missing, from the only two people he hangs around with or talks to, his mum and his brother, then he's a vulnerable adult. End of. Let me just play a promo. I'll end the show, and can we catch up in the morning, yeah?
Okay, thank you, Andy. Thank you.
You're listening to The Andy Peacher Show every Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday at 8 p.m. GMT and 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. HorizonTalkRadio.wordpress.com. Now, it's your turn.